The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Thank you, Maureen. And welcome for all of you who are here. This is the I'm substituting for Andrea Fella, as many of you know, and I'll be here for 4 weeks. So I'm going to do a series on views. So views, perceptions, perspectives, underlying beliefs, those types of things. I'm not going to be talking specifically about right view, wise view, the first step in the Eightfold Path. For those of you who are familiar with the Buddhist teachings, you know that's a common way to talk about views. But I'm going to talk about views in other ways, and other perspectives, we'll see how this unfolds, what's going to happen. So one underlying belief that we might have, and it's perfectly reasonable that we have this belief. It's probably there's a lot of evolutionary support for us to have this, but maybe it gets a little exaggerated sometimes. But we might have this belief that we should feel endlessly good. We should always feel good. Feel comfortable, have a certain amount of happiness, a certain amount of contentment. And if we're not, that means that something is wrong. Something wrong with us, something wrong with things out there, and maybe a big part of our life is about pursuing this feeling good idea. And I would say both personally and collectively, that is, as a community, as a society, we don't really have that much tolerance for not feeling good. We don't have much tolerance for facing difficulties, entering into difficulties, or working through difficulties, or discomfort. So rather than facing or entering into or turning towards difficulties, there's more an emphasis, or we may have a habit of pain-numbing approaches or pain-avoiding approaches to working with our difficulties. I'm using difficulties as kind of this vague expression as anything that's getting in the way of having us feeling endlessly good. So a little bit of what I'd like to talk about this evening is how we can have this use of spiritual, I'll use this word kind of also another vague word, spiritual. For those of you that are sitting here, maybe it's Buddhist, not necessarily. Some spiritual ideas or some spiritual practices to help us sidestep or avoid difficulties, sidestep or avoid those things that are uncomfortable, those things that are getting in the way, according to some underlying belief that we might have. Spiritual ideas or practices that help us sidestep or avoid facing some of our unresolved emotional issues. This makes perfect sense. Many of us come to a spiritual practice, to a meditation practice, as a way, because we have difficulties in our lives, we feel unsettled, feel unclear, we feel uncomfortable. Maybe it's obvious exactly what's underlying, and maybe it's not obvious. Maybe there's just this general sense of things aren't quite right, and I have this sense it can be better. Maybe you feel disconnected from your life. Maybe you're having some acute experiences. And spiritual practices and spiritual ideas can really help, can make a giant difference. I speak from experience. What I want to talk about is not that the way that we can use them to help us hold and be with and move through our difficulties, help us understand them. What I want to talk about is when we use spiritual practices to help us avoid them, to sidestep them. I think that there isn't anybody who doesn't do this. I mean, like, why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we if we find some things that help us find a little bit of calmness or a little bit of ease? Why wouldn't we apply that to help us get a Band-Aid on top of some of our difficulties? There may be a lot of wisdom in this. I know I've certainly done my share of this. Maureen read my bio, which includes so much time in silent meditation retreats. It took me a while to recognize that I was using the kind of, with longer retreats, it's easier and easier to get concentrated. To have this real, real quiet, really settled mind. And I just didn't notice how I was using this, getting into this really quiet, peaceful place as a way to avoid all the kind of the inner turmoil, the confusion I had about my life and who am I, what am I doing, you know, that kind of stuff. That worked fine until it didn't. And sometimes it worked okay on retreat, and then I'd come off retreat and I'd go back to my old life. I'm like, oh my goodness, it all come flooding in. I know people who use the skill that they had learned to get quiet and still to avoid physical pain. Maybe they had some physical pain and they were using meditation practice as a way to get really concentrated and focused so that the pain would fade away. But that turned out, you know, not to be wise all the time. There's some times when that can be supportive, but there might be some times in which that's not healthy. The pain in your body is telling you something that needs to be taken care of. And so part of the practice is to recognize what is the difference. So spiritual bypassing, we use this as a way to help disconnect us from our feelings, disconnect us from what's actually happening in the moment. Spiritual bypassing can be a way in which we avoid seeing the big picture of what's happening, and instead we're trying to pretend that everything's fine. Trying to think that, well, if I were a spiritual person, quote unquote, that maybe I wouldn't be having these emotions or this lack of clarity or these emotional difficulties. And because I'm a spiritual person, I'm just going to pretend they're not there. I'm going to, as best I can, avoid them. And instead, turn towards those things that bring some calm, those things that bring some ease, those things that bring some comfort. And to be sure, I'm using this word spiritual bypassing, this use of spiritual ideas, this use of spiritual practices as a way to help us avoid difficulties. To be sure, there may be some wisdom there too. There may need to be some healing. Maybe we just need to find a place where we can find a little bit of ease. We're not quite ready to work with some of the difficulties. We need a landing spot where we can catch our breath, so to speak. Where we can maybe start to see things from a different perspective. And to be sure, spiritual ideas, spiritual practices can be much better than some of these other ways that we might use to avoid our difficulties, the use of intoxicants or the use of the internet or whatever ways that we use to distract ourselves. So spiritual bypassing isn't about using spiritual practices themselves, because spiritual practices can bring a lot of relief and a lot of healing, a lot of freedom, a lot of peace, a lot of ease. But it's not always comfortable. It's not always clear. And it might require us to be experiencing discomfort, both physically and mentally. So spiritual bypassing is not about the particular practices. Here we do meditation. We also have some practices in daily life. It's not about those practices in general. It's about how we use them. Are we using them to disconnect from our lives? Or are we using them to connect with our life? Are we using them to avoid? Or are we using them to help us turn towards? Again, I don't want to criminalize the idea that we use them to avoid. Everybody does this in some extent or in some way or another. And it's not black and white in terms of doing 100% spiritual bypassing and no real spiritual practice. It's always like a mixture. Maybe we're using our spiritual practice to really help us to deal with certain areas of our life, but maybe there's other areas we're just not quite ready. To be sure, for me, with all this meditation practice, I was gaining some confidence and some sense of self-understanding of what was going on in my mind and what were things were important to me and what kind of underlying beliefs I had. At the same time as I was using it to avoid some of these other difficulties I was having. So spiritual bypassing is not only about a strategy for avoiding pain, because that may be the wise thing to do. It might be that we just don't quite have the capacity to be with some terrible, difficult things that have happened to us or some really uncomfortable things that we're experiencing right now. Spiritual bypassing is about legitimizing avoidance, avoiding all the kind of things that are difficult or some of them. It's different to have some wisdom and to say, you know, right now is not the time for me to work with this particular type of difficulty. When if we find that when we touch into it, we go into overwhelm, or if we go into complete collapse, that's not the time to be working with things, with difficulties. So some ways that this can show up or be expressed, spiritual bypassing, is kind of a devaluation of our feelings. Like, oh, it doesn't really matter. Yes, I feel angry because my boundaries have been crossed, or I don't feel like I'm being respected or valued. Oh, but it doesn't matter. Those are just my feelings. I'm not supposed to be angry. I'm a spiritual person. Sometimes feeling anger is a clear indicator. Doesn't mean we have to express it and go out and cause harm to others or even harm to ourselves. But this kind of dismissal or devaluation of some of our feelings, anger I think in particular, is one that we like to turn away from, avoid. Maybe there's just this general emotional numbing. Kind of if one does a lot of meditation practice, you can find that there can be a place in which you can tap into that has a certain amount of ease, maybe a cotton ball feeling. I used to like to hang out in this little place. It's kind of vague cotton where you're just hanging in out in this. I use this word cotton ball, fluffy feeling. But then you start to realize it's kind of dull. And then there's this dull in terms of there isn't sharpness or mental acuity. Dull as in boring too, but then there can just be this collapse of energy. And then you feel easily overwhelmed by everything when the energy is gone. Another way that spiritual bypassing can show up, if there's this overemphasis on the positive, this kind of Pollyannish cheery, like, oh, isn't it great? It's so great. And ignoring the things that aren't great. Not everything's great. There's a lot of injustice in the world. A lot of difficulties. Or maybe we might judge others for having those types of feelings. Having anger or overemphasizing the positive. So in this way, spiritual bypassing as a practice might mimic spiritual practice, but in terms of a person that maybe appears calm, maybe a person appears generally happy, but they're getting there from avoiding things, not actually being with what's happening. And as you know, mindfulness practice is about actually being with what's actually happening. The truth of the moment, as best we can. Mindfulness practice is about having inquiry. What's going on here? What's happening? What am I experiencing? What's here? What's going on now? That's what mindfulness practice is about. Mindfulness practice is more about checking in than checking out. Or it's mindfulness practice is more about being rather than arriving into some idealized state that we imagine exists. And mindfulness practice is more about accepting rather than avoiding. Kind of being with what's happening rather than turning away from what's happening. So that's one way in which spiritual bypassing can show up, is kind of disconnecting from our experience and legitimizing our disconnection or our avoidance by saying it's a spiritual practice. And again, I want to say that we all do this to some extent, maybe certain little corners of our experience. It's part of the path of practice, is to just notice more and more how we are, what's happening. And then we start to notice, oh yeah, I didn't realize how I'd been always turning away from anger. Didn't notice how I was turning away from the sadness I was feeling inside. There's another way in which spiritual bypassing can show up. So in addition to disconnecting from our experience, it's about holding views, holding dogmatic views. This way of clinging, clenching, being really attached to particular spiritual views. It could be another way in which we do is some spiritual bypassing. The way that this often works is that there can be a sense of we want to feel superior or we want to feel praise. So we may have this idea that if we are espousing particular views that sound wise, or if we're espousing particular views that maybe make us feel good because it's different than what other people have, that can often be accompanied by a feeling of self-righteousness. Like, I know, these other people don't know. I know, I understand, other people don't understand. And also the way that clinging to spiritual views can be a way of spiritual bypassing is when the sincere inquiry into the teachings or sincere inquiry into the practice kind of stops. Instead, we have this idea like, I know this. I know it, I know it. I don't need to think about this. I don't need to practice with it. I got this. After all, why should we be curious, be attentive, investigate what's really happening when we have the sense that we already know the truth? So there might be a rejection of this idea that this inquiry, this openness, this maybe search even for the truth of the moment, the truth, the reality of what's actually happening. there. That might be kind of put aside, and instead there might be these frenzied attempts to bolster our views and make ourselves look good or feel good, or rather than kind of exploring, rather than having this idea of a beginner's mind. We might feel like, okay, we're the expert. We don't need to think about this, worry about this. For those of you who are familiar with the Buddhist teachings, you know that in general there's this teaching, clinging, clenching, holding on to really tightly, is not the way to freedom, is not the way to greater peace, is not the way to greater ease. Instead, it leads to more difficulties, it leads to more stress, it leads to more suffering. The way to freedom is with a letting go, with a softening, the opposite of clinging and being attached. And this includes not clinging to doctrines, not clinging to philosophies, not clinging to opinions, not clinging to teachings. But of course we have to bring wisdom to this, because there, I'm using this word not clinging, but things happen on a spectrum. It's not black and white. It's not completely one way or completely another way. There's this a spectrum that we can place all of our views, our opinions, our ideas, our philosophies, the doctrines that we're holding on to. We can place our relationship to them on a spectrum according to how much we're clinging to them. It's pretty common, I think all of us do this, that in the beginning, maybe there's a little bit more clinging. Maybe we come to this practice with a sense of, oh, wow, okay, it's a little bit of relief. I found something that makes sense to me. I think it makes sense. I'm not sure. It makes sense enough that I want to investigate it further. Maybe we hear some particular teachings that really resonate, really support us, and maybe allow for some inner healing, some inner calming, some inner spaciousness, a sense of relief, a sense of coming home. And of course we want to hold on to those. Of course we do. And we should, as they support us, as long as they support us, help us find our way. And it might be that there's certain views, doctrines, teachings, philosophies that we're really holding on to, while at the same time, maybe we're letting go of other ones. So it's not like we are just one doing one thing. And maybe on certain days and in certain circumstances, we find ourselves holding on. I found myself not too long ago having a conversation with a friend of mine who's also a Buddhist practitioner, on the question of what is consciousness. And I had this idea, like, if you think about it, like, what is it? Is just, can we explain it by neuronal activity? Is it something different than that? The Buddhist teachings don't say precisely exactly what it is, and can we bring modern science to these ideas? And I don't know what it is, and this person doesn't know what it is either, but this, I mean, I think I know what consciousness is. I mean, I can recognize entities that are conscious, and I know that this glass of water isn't conscious. I'm assuming, I don't think it is, again, that all of us in this room are. But what was interesting is that I had this idea, and I was putting it forward, and the person I was speaking with was, I don't think so. And then I found myself getting more and more sure about my ideas, just because they were less sure. It was fascinating to kind of watch myself, like, no, I think it's this way because of this, and just coming up with this, you know, I wanted to defend my views and my standpoints. So maybe, you know, at that moment I was definitely clinging, and then later I could see, like, phew, what was that about? There's no need to cling. It was kind of fun to have this little debate, but maybe it would have been more fun and relaxing if there was some openness. I did pick this up because I'd like to have a slip here. The point is that maybe we cling to some views, maybe because it's a habit also. It's a habit to have this idea that if there's a doctrine, that it must be the truth, and we must hold on to it no matter what. Instead of having this sense of, well, this is my current hypothesis. This makes sense to me. This is the way that I think that this is. Other people that I have respect for are saying this, and I see it written in Dharma books, or those of you who read the scriptures. I feel confident in this, as opposed to saying, this is the truth. So that's maybe one end of the spectrum might be holding on, and maybe we hold on, let go, hold on, let go. Maybe some things we hold on, other things we let go. Then in the middle, somewhere in the middle of this spectrum, could be this idea of wise view. For those of you who are familiar with the Buddhist teachings, know that wise view, or right view, is the first step in the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path. That is the path to awakening, the path to enlightenment. So there in the Buddhist teachings, this idea, don't cling, including don't cling to views, but also this offering of wise view. One way we could summarize wise view is to pay attention, notice what leads to less freedom and what leads to greater freedom. And use this to guide your practice. Use this to guide your behavior. Use this to guide your meditation practice. It's a guide to wholesome actions. If you have this inquiry and you have this sincere question, does it have greater freedom in the big picture if I'm behaving in a way that's unethical? For this inquiry, you'll discover that's not true. But this adoption of wise view, this way of taking the perspective, the lens of what leads to greater freedom and what doesn't, that's somewhere in the middle of the spectrum, right? If this is, in my view, is something worthwhile holding on to as a way to help us navigate and negotiate all of our experiences and what we're experiencing on the inside, our inner life, as well of how we interact with others. So then maybe on the other end of the spectrum, maybe in some ways we can even say it's like beyond the spectrum, are those who are awakened, completely liberated, enlightened. That end of the spectrum, they don't have attachments. They hold to everything with an open hand. That includes views. They have views, but they don't have attachment to them. And then when you don't have an attachment to views, there's no reason to get in arguments with other people about views. So they have a liberation not only from everything, essentially, includes liberation from holding on to particular doctrines. So the Buddhist teaching is not that we should not have any views and that we should just get rid of them all. But to just notice where we are on this spectrum. Just notice our relationship to our views. An encouragement to adopt wise view, to notice which ones helps leads to greater freedom, helps freedom, and which ones don't. But if instead that you find that you're holding on to views, doctrines, philosophies, as part of spiritual bypassing, as a part of avoiding checking in with what's actually happening or what's actually are the teachings are, instead you have adopting the view of dogmatic fundamentalism or whatever it might be, you can work with this in a few ways. One is just bring mindfulness to all areas of your life as best you can. Sometimes we might have that feeling that we just come and we sit and we meditate, and that's when our mindfulness is. But mindfulness practice is about to have this inquiry to all areas of our life. This inquiry, this awareness, this curiosity. And maybe sometimes ask ourselves, well, what would I be feeling? What would be happening if I weren't doing this particular spiritual practice right now? If I weren't adopting this view right now? This doesn't have to be a complicated psychological, archaeological dig, just a gentle inquiry. What would I be feeling? What might I be experiencing if I weren't saying to everybody, may you be happy, 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 right? Sometimes we might use these phrases as a way to kind of help us avoid any like feeling of irritation that we might have. Another way that we can do this is to also practice with being with uncomfortable emotions, practice with being with difficult emotions, with wisdom. I don't want to say that we have to jump into the most difficult things. There's no need to do that. And that often is not the best or healthiest or easiest, wisest approach. But another way to work with spiritual bypassing is to just gain more capacity to be with what's uncomfortable. Then we don't have to bypass it. We don't have to avoid it. So how do we do that? One way is how I suggested in the guided meditation this evening, is that when we notice that there are emotions in the body, as best we can, to notice the bodily sensations that are associated with those emotions. This may take some practice. But the bodily sensations are here, are now, are the reality, the truth of the moment. Whereas our emotions have two elements. They have the bodily ones that are here and now, and they also have the mental ones, which are often a story about the past or the future. Past, how dare they? I can't believe they did that. I can't believe I did that. I shouldn't do that. And you know, we kind of like are beating ourselves up, and then we're feeling worse and worse. And look, you can't even do this right. Now you're even being self-critical. You know, all the thoughts, right? They're just thoughts, but wow, they can be really powerful. And off we go. And the emotions can build on itself and get bigger and bigger. Whereas if we can notice that the emotion has these two parts, in the body and in the mind, and just allow the mind to be there without fueling it, without trying to push it away, allowing it to be there, but bringing your attention to the bodily sensations. That allows these thoughts, these stories, to just kind of have a certain amount of attrition, have a certain amount of not building themselves up more and more and getting more and more complicated and stirring ourselves up more and more. Those of you who have been listening to Dharma talks, I'm sure probably all Dharma teachers say this at one time or other, but I have like emotions arise and they pass away. They don't stay there forever. And when they arise, they have things to teach us. There's reasons why they arise, but they don't need to stay there for a long, long, long time for us to learn what there is to be taught about them. So we can let the mental part just do what the mental part does, whatever that might be, and we can bring our attention to the bodily sensations. And that way we can increase our capacity to be with what's difficult. Then we don't have to do spiritual bypassing to avoid it. Instead, we can use our mindfulness practice, whatever spiritual practices you might do, in addition or instead of, or to help us work with, metabolize, untangle, understand, be with, hold, allow, dare I say, appreciate the difficulties that we're having. It's the truth of the moment. There's a reason why they're there. Conditions were such that they're there. So rather than trying to disown or turn away from, we can use our practices to help us be with, honor, respect, acknowledge. So in this way, views can be like the underlying belief that we should feel good all the time. I must do anything and everything to avoid not feeling good. This way, that's kind of those underlying beliefs kind of support spiritual bypassing. One way spiritual bypassing shows up is clinging to views about doctrines or philosophy. This is the truth. I know exactly what is the truth of the meaning of life, what happens after death, or whatever it might be. And this view that it's not that maybe that we can't do it or we shouldn't do it or shouldn't be with our difficulties or that we shouldn't have them somehow. So in this way, kind of views and spiritual bypassing can be associated, but also adopting this view of just noticing what leads to freedom, like really deeply leads to freedom, can help us find our way with this. So I'll stop here, and we have some time for some questions or comments if people would like to ask a question or comment.
So earlier in your talk, you spoke about making decisions or judgments about a way to respond to something, either what would lead to more freedom or what would lead to less freedom. And it seems like a pretty subtle kind of distinction. It also requires trying to anticipate the future, perhaps. So I guess my question is really about what do you mean by that, and could you elaborate? And then there's a second question which is related to that, which is, rather than asking ourselves what would lead to more freedom versus not, is it an equally valid question to ask what would lead to more suffering or not?
Yes. So I'll say the second part. Yeah, I think this question of whether or not it leads to more suffering is a perfectly valid one. Is, you know, suffering this direction? Absolutely. And then maybe the question of what is freedom is less suffering. For me, often, it's the freedom, more or less freedom, is associated with a certain amount of openness, a certain amount of, kind of a kinesthetic as well as a mental openness. If I'm clinging, holding on tightly to something, that's actually very little freedom is there, this holding on tightly. And so this idea of about anticipating the future, I think we learn. We often learn, like, oh yeah, the last time I did this, I ended up here. Yeah, last time I did this, I ended up there. I thought it was going to be better, but maybe 5 years later we discover, oh, that turned out not to be such a good approach. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'll say that. Okay. Thank you.
I like the idea that wise view is the capacity to recognize what brings more freedom and what brings less freedom. And it's interesting to consider the notion that more freedom is not necessarily equivalent but includes less suffering. But you also seem to reference this notion of more freedom as having both a somatic or bodily component and then also a mental component. So it sounds like, are there particular tells that you can use to recognize when you're moving toward more freedom versus less freedom?
Absolutely. And I would say a big part of meditation practice and or mindfulness just in daily life is for each of us to discover our own tells. For each of us to discover, oh yeah, I'm clenching my jaw a lot. Oh yeah, okay, I guess I'm tense. But we don't even notice because we're not being mindful, we're not being present for our experience. Or, oh yeah, I'm talking really fast. That means that I'm actually nervous, or my voice has gone up higher, or something like this. I have a big part of practice is for us to discover for ourselves. Each of us has our own.
I have noticed in myself, and this is actually pointed out to me by someone else, that I move forward in my chair if I'm starting to hold on to something. What about so that's the physical aspect. What about the mental aspect?
I think many of us have this experience. Is there a sense of, there's this word I'm looking for, rumination going over and over and over something, and just kind of like this obsessive quality? That's not where freedom is. Like, you can't stop. Whereas freedom is the more, I use this word, spacious. Like, oh, where there's room for maybe like new ideas to bubble up, or new appreciations, or some space for that. Does that help? I didn't write back.
It's just building off that. I found that if I think about freedom in terms of suffering, it will immediately lead me to avoidance, trying to avoid the situation. And if, on the contrary, I think about freedom in terms of love, it pushes me towards something that is often more challenging in the moment, but that will be more liberating on the long term. So that's how I gain my spaciousness.
Fantastic.
You're talking about, yeah.
Fantastic. And I appreciate very much that you're talking about mentioning that freedom doesn't mean comfort. It's maybe in the big picture, it does, certainly. But it does mean that sometimes things are uncomfortable as we're moving towards it.
Very much so, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, and maybe there are times when it makes more sense for us to be using the view of it's suffering, it's all suffering. I can't see anything except suffering. Well, is there more suffering or less suffering? Maybe that's our experience at the time. Maybe thinking about freedom just doesn't feel accessible or appropriate. Or maybe it's more motivating for us to think about, okay, I just got to get away from suffering. We can adopt either one, both. I think different people have a propensity to think things a certain way. You know what mine is. I like to think more about freedom, but we often hear some teachings, a lot of teachings about just, you know, get away from suffering. I don't think it's turned on, Lewis.
I guess that my question would be couched in that parable about the two arrows, is being able to differentiate between the first arrow and the second arrow. And certainly standing in the way of the first arrow is not a wise path.
But might be unavoidable. Yeah, thank you, Lewis. For those of you who don't know the story of the two arrows, the first arrow is what life brings you. You have no control, terrible diagnosis, unfortunate things that we don't have control. And the second arrow are the ones that we add to ourselves, the stories that we add on top, the self-criticism, the anger of towards other people and lashing out and causing lots of harm, which then ends up harming ourselves or whatever that might be. So,
I guess the concrete example for me would be that I've been sitting with a good deal of discomfort, and it seems unwise simply to invite it.
Yes.
But to find a more comfortable solution that still allows me to be mindful.
Nice, nice. Thank you. Can we send a microphone this direction? Yeah, great. Thank you.
Hello. Hi. So I'm pretty early on in my practice, and I think that I don't really have that clarity to know yet when I sit down to meditate or even am having mindful moments throughout my day to know if it's me bypassing something or if I'm really facing it. And this is especially true in the midst of college because my life is just so intense all the time that almost every time I do sit down to meditate, I actually am really trying to escape something or have, you know, like that 20 minutes in my morning, because otherwise I'm actually like physically moving and bustling so much. So I was just curious if you could describe in detail how what it feels like physically and mentally when you can sense that you're in that fluffy space you were talking about, the cotton ball zone, where, you know, that's, you know, you sort of in another land looking away, versus moments where you feel, okay, I'm really grounded and I really am staring something straight in the eye. Cause I don't know. I'm thinking about when I meditate, I'm trying to distinguish right now when I'm in either place or either or in.
Yeah. So first, I don't want to say that this cotton ball place is terrible and you should never be there. It may be just what you need. It may be time for your mind, especially like when you're in school, to take a little break and relax, right? I don't know. And so part of practice is to use wisdom and to just find for yourself what's onward leading? That is, what's going to help you find more freedom eventually? Maybe if not right there, but some practices we do are just like a dead end, that hanging out in cotton may be helpful until it's not, and to recognize that. So you asked for a description of what this cottony place is. It's it's a little bit like, so I don't know if it's the same for everybody. Let's see, there's a word that I've heard lots of people use, but right now it escapes me. Maybe it'll come to me as I describe it. It's a little bit, feeling a little bit numb, maybe, and a little bit disconnected. So you hear sounds, you feel things, but they aren't really, there isn't a clarity around them. There isn't a sense of actually being with the experience. But I think for a telltale sign is if the energy then just kind of drops, and then you start to feel more and more overwhelmed because there just isn't a sense of energy. So it's a type of kind of collapsing and closing down. Whereas mindfulness is more of a, as best you can, kind of an opening and a crispness to be with, like, oh yeah, this is happening. Oh yeah, now this is happening. And my in-breath feels like this. My out-breath feels like that. This sensation of my body feels like this. So maybe that's one way to think about it. I know I'm using vague language. I think for everybody it's a little bit different. But does you have a sense of, is it, has the potential to lead to something that might be helpful? Or does it feel like, kind of a collapsing? It's my best description. Okay, thank you. Okay, well, it's 9 o'clock, so I'm sorry that you have one more question. If you like, you can come up here and talk to me. Otherwise, I want to respect everybody's time. And I wish you all a wonderful evening. And may you find the capacity to be with whatever difficulties that might find you. Thank you.